What is up, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome back to another episode of the River Blast Podcast, episode number 5. This one was up for debate, but we settled on, what is it, two-time batting champion, Bill Madlock.
Yeah, it's the Bill Madlock episode.
Bill Madlock episode.
We almost went with Jay Hay. We almost went with your pick, Tyke Redman.
Tyke Redman, the center fielder that I modeled my game around when I was in Little League.
Bless your heart.
Just a lot of diving for balls that I could not get to, but it looked like I tried. But yeah, episode number 5, overall episode number 6, and Alex, we talked about on our last episode how well the West Coast road trip was going, and I think we spoke too soon, because as soon as we stopped talking and let the Pirates go back to playing, it kind of all went downhill. They split a series with the Giants. They get swept in 2 games by the Minnesota Twins, who, though they're in second place, in one of the worst divisions in recent baseball history. And it's just not looking good for the Pirates, who now will come into Thursday just 1 game over 500 at 61-60. Let's talk about the West Coast trip.
Yeah, I mean, grand scheme of things, 4-5, that's not, you know, apocalypse level bad, but they can't have 4-5 road trips this time of the year.
No.
Especially whenever they started off strong, you know, 2 out of 3 in Colorado. Great pitching, you know, throughout that entire series in Colorado. Offense seemed to be going around, and the offense kept, you know, going in San Francisco. Man, that San Francisco series, I'm more disappointed with that because I think, you know, the Giants have about the same amount of chance of winning an NL wild card as the Minnesota Twins, which is to say none.
Yeah.
But the game on Saturday, which I don't want to make biometrics jokes or anything like that because I'm better than that, or at least I like to pretend that I am. That was a really ugly loss. The Sunday one, in my opinion, was just as bad
Biometrics was Friday.
Yes. Biometrics was Friday. Yeah. Sunday was the infielders cannot get a ball to save their lives.
And yeah, I look at that San Francisco series as kind of like that girl in high school that you probably could have had a chance with if you just played it cool, but you really psyched yourself out, and things just didn't work out. And that's the epitome of how that all went, where that was their series to lose. And coming out with a split, I mean, that they didn't split. That's a loss, in my opinion, splitting with a team that, you know, we debated on how bad the Giants really were last episode, but we saw they're not a good team. And, I mean, to lose a game on Friday where you scored 10 runs, despite batting Sadler with 2 runners on, despite starting Clay Holmes, and then to lose on Sunday where you just continuously self-implode in the infield. I mean, it's no wonder what happened in Minnesota. I could have told you after the way they left with that bad taste in their mouths what was going to happen next. And then you see this Minnesota series, they just leave a ton of runners on base, and now they're coming back home with, I mean, we say it every series they play in now, it's the biggest series of the season. But I mean, this is do or die. The next 7 games will pretty much tell us if this team has any pulse left or if we're going to start seeing guys like Newman and Kramer and a lot of other young guys get called up here soon, or at least confirm that they will be here in September getting relevant playing time, because the 2018 campaign will be over, right?
Yeah, best way of putting it, the Pittsburgh Pirates are a 6-6 football team.
Yeah.
But they're 6-6. And they've got the teams they got to pass, you know, next 4 weeks.
Yeah.
They still have control of their own destiny. Next 16 games are against teams that they have to leapfrog in the standings. 4-5 or, you know, 500 across that will not cut it. They got to win these series. Out of those 16, they got to go 11-5.
I wish Neil Huntington could give another speech and try to, I mean, because think about it. Since they made these trades, this team has not performed. I mean, the most exciting thing to happen since they acquired Archer and Kella was a 4 1/3 innings start from Archer in his debut. That's the biggest Pirates game that's really come from this. I mean, they had a big win against Colorado. I guess you could say that Colorado series as a whole was probably the most positive thing to happen since the trade deadline. But since the GM held up his end of the bargain, everything's kind of gone to hell. And they really need to step it up and make some changes quickly. What makes me uncomfortable as we talk about how this West Coast trip ends and how they come back home is if they had Atlanta first, I would be feeling a little bit more easy. But just the way that this team has played Chicago, and I know Atlanta's hot, and I know Acuna's doing really good things, but I feel like the Cubs are the team that will just put the nail in the coffin on this year against the club. You disagree?
I disagree. I'd rather have the Cubbies right now because I think the offense could use, you know, a boost after that Minnesota series where they couldn't get anything going against a terrible bullpen.
Yeah.
So now bring in terrible starting pitching, I guess, with, you know, Chicago, which I guess terrible might be a little strong. But yeah. John Lester is
their best pitcher, and he's not even that good.
He's catching up to his FIP fast.
Yes.
At record speed.
So we kind of hinted at it, and, you know, we are a Pirates media affiliate of some sort. Not affiliate, but we talk about the Pirates. Yeah, we're not affiliated at all with the
wow.
Pirates.
Wow, okay.
I mean, one of us.
Do you
want
to make some
but,
stuff up?
Anyway, we got to talk about the Clay Holmes start on Friday. As I said, we mentioned it a little earlier. Now, Alex, you're much more of a sabermetrics kind of new school baseball guy than I am. You know, maybe it's just my rural Burgettstown background or something. I mean, I'm a believer in sabermetrics, but you're more for the fancy numbers than I am. And which is probably better because that's honestly where the game is going. But I think we can all agree that while the Holmes decision on paper might not have looked like the worst idea, the time to do this could not have gone more poorly, correct?
It could have gone more poorly. They could have done it in this series against Chicago. I mean, it's you don't want to... That San Francisco series, they had two games where they scored 10 runs and they had a shutout in a four-game series and they went away with a series split. You're supposed to win all three of those games,
yeah,
at the very least. That doesn't even count, you know, Sunday right there. So it's, I really haven't pored over the numbers myself. Maybe there is, you know, a real correlation between, you know, pitcher performance after pitching in Colorado and the rest of the year. And I might even be a little more inclined to believe it after all of Clint's years managing in Colorado. But it's tough to punt away a game like that. Or if you do punt away a game like that, go all out. Francisco's sitting. Polanco's sitting. Everyone, rest day. We're giving this one up. We're going to win 3 out of 4.
And you bring up the rest and everything and with Clint knowing Colorado. But here's what I don't feel people are talking about enough. You know, as much as these players need rest, how is it any better of an idea to pitch a guy who's not as good as the pitching staff that's doing well on a flight coming straight from Indy to Colorado, or not Colorado, excuse me, San Francisco, even further? He just arrives, he knows he's got all the pressure on him, and pretty much anything can go wrong. I mean, there's very little chance of him going out there and people saying, okay, this was the right decision to bring him up. He would have to have like a Nick King MLB debut type start where he'd go like 7 perfect innings. You know, if Clay Holmes even left this game in a tie, people would call it the wrong call. But for him to just, I feel like they threw this guy in a lose-lose situation for Holmes. And that's something I feel like they did not really evaluate, is just that this guy's, you know, a human, he's a rookie, and he might not have been ready to handle the pressure that came with this decision.
I think this is just something that popped into my head because you said the Kingham word.
Yeah.
Because Kingham got rocked in his last couple starts in the major leagues. But would we be having this conversation if it was Nick Kingham making a spot start? Someone who has built up a little bit of trust with the, you know, part, and to be like, okay, I could see that. They couldn't do that because they optioned Kingham down to AAA whenever Kelly came up and he didn't have the 10 days in the minor leagues. But could they have just, like, dashed him in the bullpen for a couple days and optioned either a bullpen arm or a bench guy and played a little short there, kept Kingham up there? Maybe, you know, we have a different conversation. I don't know how Kingham could have pitched worse than, you know, 2 2/3, 6 runs.
Well, I mean, he has done that.
He's literally done that
in his last two starts.
I like my odds a lot better
but
with Nick Kingham than Clay Holmes.
That's what I was going to say, and I do agree the Kingham factor in this also has been something that hasn't been talked about enough. Kingham is, I think, what screwed them here because, like you said, if he had been available, he would have been the guy to be chosen. But had he not got rocked in those two starts before they get Archer and they have to send someone down, I mean, A, it made it easy for them to send him down. And B, they thought, this guy isn't any better of an option than Clay Holmes, because Clay's last start in the MLB was against Milwaukee, and that was relative. I mean, kind of.
It was
a
good start.
It was a good start. No, I was saying it was a relatively big game, and he handled it pretty well, and he was a good start. But yeah, I think everyone still does have faith in Kingham. But you asked if they would have made him start. Considering if Kingham would have been the starter, this would have had the same amount of backlash because
I don't buy that for a second.
Because of his more recent starts. If Kingham would have gone 5 innings and allowed 3 earned runs in his last 2 outings, then got sent down and had enough time down to come back up, people wouldn't have been as pissed. But because he was so bad before he got sent down, this would have had the same response. Maybe 90% of it. It wouldn't have had the full Clay Holmes effect, I guess. Like, Clay Holmes is scarred for life in Pittsburgh, to me. I think that, like, I mean, don't get me wrong, I think he still will have a future with the Pirates, but this is, barring something crazy, like, he wins, like, 15 games next year or something, this is how he will be remembered in Pittsburgh for almost ever.
Until he does something better.
He has to do something significantly better.
Get another chance, and honestly, I think Clay is going to be the guy next year, or one of the guys that if a starter goes down, he's going to be one of the first guys.
He'll
up.
Be the Nick Kingham next year.
Yeah,
if not Nick Kingham, it will be he'll be the Brandon Compton. If this team's a playoff team, something like that, and that's not enough. I think this guy needs to do something incredible, which I don't really think he'll ever really do in his major league career, especially with the Pirates, to erase this. And that's not necessarily his fault, but this is a guy that, like, 10 years from now, you'll hear Clay Holmes' name, and you'll think of that start before anything else. Fair?
No, I think...
You're right.
Giving the guy a death sentence.
I mean, again, it's not his fault, but sometimes that's just how the game works. I mean, think about it. Wally Pipp was an all-star, but... I don't know. Maybe he got Wally pipped for bad things happening. I don't know. We'll wrap it up with another guy who has an impression to be determined, and that is Shane Baz. Boz.
Wizard of Boz.
Wizard of Boz, yeah, whatever. Well, now he's, you know, off to the magical land of Tampa Bay. Ugh. And he was the player to be named later. The third piece in that Archer deal, Alex, knowing that Boz goes, one of the top 5 prospects, I believe number 4, last year's first round draft pick, second best pitching prospect, and I know you had a hissy fit when they traded Hearn. Does losing Boz hurt more than losing Hearn to you? Does this make you look at the Archer trade different?
I think it's fair if you look at the Archer trade different, because whenever you hear a player to be named later, you usually think, you know, some low 20s level prospect, middle infielder, whatever. Which, you know, this is probably one of the biggest names as a player to be named later in quite some time.
Yeah.
I don't think it was a bad trade, though.
No.
Still, I would still make this trade. Because Glasnow, Meadows, and Boz, they had the three of the highest ceilings in the Pirates organization, but they had 3 of the lowest floors.
None of them had an immediate chance to leave an impact. I mean, Boz wasn't going to be with the major league team till what, like 2021, 2022?
Maybe the Pirates 2021 at least, yeah.
Yeah, and then, you know, Meadows and Glasnow probably could have latched on earlier than that, but considering with the roster that we have, you know, we're probably better off with those deals, with them being elsewhere because of the guys we got for them. And that's my thing, where Boz, that and, you know, Chris Mueller pointed this out on The Fan. How much do you really trust the Pirates to develop a high school pitching prospect?
They did with Tyon.
Yeah.
But that was years ago. And you look at, I mean, Kingham was a high school pitching prospect. Mm-hmm. I think he was in the same draft as Tyon, though.
I think so.
Yeah, not like the one right after.
Yeah.
But they have spent a lot of high draft picks on high school pitchers. And so far, not a lot of them have worked out. I mean, we might say something differently about Mitch Keller. I've, you know, been on record saying that I'm not 100% in the Mitch Keller train. Ooh. But the thing about Boz is what makes him so successful right now is that he has 5-plus pitches.
Yeah.
And the Pirates don't...
Well, that's up for debate if you're, you know, writing for some blogs.
Okay, but 5-plus pitches. And they're... The Pirates don't have a lot of 5-pitch guys come through their system. And Tim Williams of Pirates Prospects tweeting me saying that they were already, you know, making him focus on fastball slider, which isn't a bad mentality. I don't see how there's anything wrong then or anything wrong with we're going to really work on three pitches, get those really well to get up to the major leagues. There's nothing wrong fundamentally with that, but I don't want to pretend that Shane Boz with 3-plus pitches is the same pitcher as Shane Boz with 5-plus pitches. He could be better. He could be worse. This is the type of guy that usually whenever I make these hypothetical trades that I try to sell, the guy with the really high ceiling and the really low floor that really hasn't done a lot to stand out, you know, after about a year in the organization. I wish him the best, but I don't know if he's really going to be this, you know, top tier pitcher that people are pretending that he is right now. Yeah, or think that he is right now.
That's my closing comment. What's the number one thing Shane Boz has done to show you any sort of potential? It's being a first round draft pick. That's about it. So
A couple of scouts who said, oh yeah, this is the number 98 prospect in baseball.
Yeah. I mean, that's all he's shown me. And I know he hasn't had a lot of chances to show that, I guess, being in the minors for a little bit over a year, but still, I mean, that's a price I'm willing to pay for a guy who can come in and help, though he hasn't really been the best in three starts. I'm more than willing to roll the dice on Archer more than I am on Boz. So that will wrap up what's going on recently. Now we are going to move on to our interview part of the show where we bring on Nate Werner, where he will talk about his recent article. That's coming up. Hope you guys enjoy. Joining us now, we have at Goldbox Stats, a.k.a. Nate Werner of Pirates Breakdown. Nate, how's it going?
I'm doing pretty well. How are you?
I can't complain. I'm glad you're second guest here, and it's not going to be, you know, there's not going to be as much, you know, podcast tension as there was last episode with Jared there. You know,
no.
him and Alex were just giving each other the eyes. I felt like,
Wait a minute.
There was the first out there.
Yeah, I mean, it felt like, you ever hear that song Amnesia by 5 Seconds of Summer? Like, it was, you know, I remember the day you told me you were leaving, and that is me singing. So, like, no, but good to have you on here. Good to have you on.
Thanks for having me on.
Can't wait to cut out that last, you know.
No, that stays.
That stays? All right. When you can figure out how to edit this, I will let you keep that in there. So... Nate, you wrote an article on Pirates Breakdown and seems to be doing pretty well, getting a little bit of buzz online there on the interweb, and it's a question saying, have the Pirates solved their home run problem? And, you know, the headline itself kind of grabs you in because the Pirates are a team that historically have won with the home run. I mean, you look back as far as, you know, like the 60s, that they've always been a team that really, you know, excelled with the long ball. And even recently, and you know, in the turn of the decade, in the beginning of the hurdle era, they had home run hitters. But in the recent years, the home run has been something they've kind of strayed away from, obviously not by choice. And they really struggled with the home run last year, despite everyone else in baseball really hitting it at an above average rate. But this year, you're saying that has changed.
It has. I mean, just looking at where they are this year versus where they were last year. Last year, at the end of the season, I think they were 52 home runs off the league-wide pace. This season, my numbers are going into action on Monday, so they're a little dated. But they were, I think, 3 off the pace in the NL. They were 9 off the overall league pace. So they seem to be hitting home runs back at least in that sort of middle ground average. They're no longer at the bottom of the barrel. So yeah, I think they have solved that problem. Then I sort of, in the article, I sort of took it a step further and looked at how legit are they in terms of have they solved that problem? Like, is it a sustainable fix?
And you talked about in your article how it's kind of crazy how this has happened, considering all the factors that went against them in 2018. They lose their top home run guy in McCutchen. Josh Bell, their second best home run hitter from 2017, obviously far less production-wise in home runs this season. They get a guy who's a 30-home run guy in Tampa Bay last year, Corey Dickerson. And he comes in here, and he's not hitting at a rate of 30 home runs. Yet, their home run numbers are improving. What's led to that?
So, I think the two largest factors, having Starling Marte back and having Gregory Polanco finally start to mash the ball.
Okay.
But it's also been a large factor of guys who hadn't shown that they were legit long ball threats really coming into their own and hitting a lot of long balls. Prime example of Francisco Cervelli. He's a veteran in baseball. He'd never hit more than, I think, 7 home runs. He has 11 right now. So there were a lot of, which in my mind is a red flag that, like, maybe that's not a sustainable thing.
Mm-hmm.
When you have a bunch of guys who have never shown that they can do it, all of a sudden doing it. And so that's really why I wrote the article.
So rank these three factors in order from greatest to least as to why you think this has gone better. Health, change in approach, and the new lineup. As you talked about, you know, there's new guys contributing. Obviously Marte, who was healthy, but, you know, not here. And then, you know, I'm sure they saw the lack of home runs in 2017 in their analytics, and their hitting coach wanted to change that. So how do you weigh these as to what's created the most change?
I think the biggest factor is Gregory Polanco and Marte being back. I think those two guys make up for the fact that you lost McCutchen, and you lost a lot of your power production out of Bell. Now, all that does is make up for that fact. How they've improved is largely guys on the bench, you know, non-power guys developing into power guys. I'm sorry, I lost all three. Health slash getting Marte back,
mm-hmm.
new approach, and what was the third one?
The new guys in the lineup. So you're seeing Diaz a little bit more. You're seeing Dickerson here for the first time. You're seeing, you know, different guys, like Moran maybe. And you hear those names, none of them are big home run hitters, but somehow with them in the lineup, we're producing more power.
Right. So it's tough to differentiate the last two because, you know, I guess I'd say new approach is probably it. Although you lose the production out of Dickerson, so you know, does Cervelli's improvement negate Dickerson's lack of power? That's up for debate. So I guess I'd sort of tie those last two. But in terms of what has actually improved their overall numbers, getting Polanco and Marte back. That was, I think, the single largest factor. But I think what actually improved their numbers was the guys with the new approach and the younger guys coming up.
Okay, so like Noah likes to bring up for me a lot of times is I'm the numbers guy out of the two of us. I cannot do what you just did right now. So could you explain it so even a dummy like me
a dummy like me who messed up
a
simple
dummy
math
like Noah can yes. understand. What went into this? How'd you calculate this?
So essentially, I took the launch angle and exit velocity of each ball in play and said, okay, a ball that is hit with this exit velocity and this launch angle goes for a home run this percentage of the time. That's a simplification of the math, but essentially that's it, is where I'm taking the average number of home runs that are hit on balls with a particular launch angle and exit velocity.
And I guess the immediate response would be, you don't factor in launch direction in this.
I don't. I was a little concerned getting into the weeds. It's about overfitting my models, and it's tough. I just don't have enough data, enough wealth of data to really factor that in. I think it does play a role. So, for instance, Josh Harrison tends to get a lot of sort of cheap power, and I think that's because he pulls the ball, and when you're pulling the ball, you're hitting it to the shorter parts of the field rather than going to deep center.
And we should just clarify right here, of Nate's list, whatever he was working on this on Monday, I think that's 120 homers that the Pirates have hit as a team out of the guys that you list here.
126.
126. I can't add good numbers, guy. But, like, the what you came up with equation-wise, it was like 128, 129. So this does pretty much check out, you know. This isn't a wacky outlier where you're like, oh, well, they should have hit 54 homers.
Right, right. Yeah, I think it fits pretty well in terms of being accurate, but then it also gives you a good sense of players who are sort of outliers, who are large variations away from their expectation.
Now, you talked about in your story, and we kind of hinted on it a little bit here, with like Bell having a huge drop-off. With other guys like Cervelli having better power gears, why is Bell having a worse one? Is that something out of his control? Maybe the pitchers facing him have found a weakness, or is it an internal problem with him? Has it been a change in his approach? What have you seen?
So I can't so much comment on his change of approach because I didn't run the numbers for 2017. But what I see with Bell is that he is getting a little unlucky. He has the right approach. I have him estimated at 11 home runs, so it's a 3-home run difference. The fact that he is so different implies that some bad luck, some significant bad luck on his given his approach, he should be hitting with a little bit more power than he is.
Now you look at some of these guys. You talked about Cervelli again. You question if he would be sustainable, this power coming into next year, because you could argue that this year at the plate he's having power-wise might be an anomaly when you consider his whole career numbers with home runs. Is this something that the Pirates will be able to improve upon again next year, in your opinion? You talked about how they were second worst in the National League. Now they're middle of the pack. Do you see them in 2019 being an above-average home run team, or is this where this group will pretty much stay as long as they have this kind of core on their roster?
I think they'll probably stay around where they are. They'll probably be a middle of the pack team. Maybe they can improve a little bit, move up the rankings a few spots, being that sort of upper middle third of the league or whatever. But I think by and large, like Francisco Cervelli's change in approach this season, which is his numbers are sustainable by my math. So if they can find players that fit Francisco Cervelli's mold and bring them in, they can improve those numbers and maybe get to that sort of upper third of the league. But I think that this is more or less where they should be in sort of this middle of the pack, given the group that they have.
And we touched on Josh Bell, how he's, you know, a little unlucky. This stemmed off, or this idea originally stemmed off from a article that you had in Pirates Guide 2018 about Josh Harrison. You know, you brought up the cheap power. You know, he hit 16 home runs, I believe it was, last year. And if you watched him, about a dozen of them were about 340-something feet down the left field line. Not exactly, you know, tape measure shots. There's a guy here that I want to bring up who homered Wednesday even. So this is going to be even more exaggerated. Elias Diaz, who now has 9 home runs. But
Your guy.
And you know what? I think everyone has agreed this has been a good season for him. But by going by your model here, he should be around 5.
Yeah, that's what I was a little bit surprised by. I know a lot of people talked about his power. And if you look at him, I mean, he's built like a hoss. He's a big dude. So I'm not surprised to hear them talk about his power. He hasn't had it through the minor leagues, rather, which to a stats guy like me, you say, well, maybe he doesn't actually have that power. Maybe there's just something about, you know, his approach at the plate that doesn't give him that power. Him having 9 home runs puts him into Francisco Cervelli territory, where he's a legitimate power threat. Like you said, I had him at 5 home runs going into Monday, and which makes me question the legitimacy of his power. I think he might be a little bit overstated this season, which is just something, you know, going into next season to not expect him to be, you know, a 20 home run threat or something like that.
So as we wrap this up, Nate, give us your top 2 guys in home runs for the Pittsburgh Pirates next season.
It's still going to be
Polanco
and Marte.
Okay.
Unless Jung Ho Gung comes back.
We're still going with that. You still got faith, huh?
I still have faith.
All right.
I still have his jersey, so that's probably why.
All right. Well, you know, there we go. So give him a follow on Twitter, GoldBoxStats. All one word, no underscores or anything.
All one word.
All right. And be sure to give that article a read. We didn't even do it justice by spending as much time as we did on it. It's a very interesting read. I can guarantee you, you'll kind of get a new appreciation to, you know, how analytical baseball is. And I think a criticism for some analytical writers is that they don't do a good enough job of explaining their numbers. I think you did a really good job in your piece there, and I think that anyone would enjoy this. So, Nate, thanks for coming on, and I believe you're staying on with us.
I am sticking around.
As we move on to segments, which is coming up next. All right, Alex and Nate. It is segment time here as we wrap things up. First segment we always do, buy, sell, trade. I think I went for, oh, you want me to go first again?
Go first.
What? That's like Clint Hurdle found out, when you have a sustainable leadoff hitter, you know, things are normally better. So I'll go first again. I am buying Clay Holmes a beer, because as I talked about, that guy is going to be known in Pittsburgh for a decision that was 100% out of his hands. And in my opinion, a situation that it was pretty much a lose-lose. Unless if he pitched the game of his life, it was going to end bad for him. I kind of feel bad because I think that he can one day be a decent MLB player, but I think his legacy is nearly cemented in Pittsburgh, unless if he comes in and does something big. Unless if he does, if he has a career to the level of an average guy, they'll still remember him for that start. I'm telling you, Alex, you have a very smart and well thought out brain. I have a brain that is a Yinzer brain. All right. I mean, I live in the mud when it comes to just understanding Yinzers. I get it. I will know how the common folk think.
This is why you're the man of the people. I am the guy who's really trying.
I'm sitting here wearing a AA baseball team hat, a UCLA shirt that I got on eBay for $5, and, you know, just with this crappy beard that I've kind of grown out, I don't even know, and I'm just, yeah, I'm a man of the people. I know how the people are going to react. They're going to hate this guy. I got to buy him an Icy Light and say this is the only nice thing that you're going to get from Pittsburgh for pretty much the rest of your life.
That's the worst thing to get from Pittsburgh.
I know, and that's what I'm saying. It's not going to be good. Aside from your paychecks, which is probably a little bit better than Icy Light, this is probably the best thing you're going to get from Pittsburgh from here on out, unless you throw like a no-hitter or something. So I'm buying Clay Holmes. I am selling 2018. I'm done. I know we talked about it earlier. I already have the ice cream, so I don't know why I'm even still talking about this. Nate, I don't know if you know this or not. Every year when I give up my playoff hopes and I just say the Pirates are not making the playoffs this year, I go and I get myself a little plastic hat full of ice cream, soft serve, and I kind of just like, it's my acceptance. It's kind of like my final step where, like, it's just like I ran the Noah Hyles numbers, which are nothing special, nothing like yours. But I kind of just accept it, you know, this is it. They're not making the playoffs. It's done. It's all downhill from here. And that happened like super early this year, like maybe like early July, right before Neil said his thing. I think it was in the Phillies series right before July.
Right before they got good.
Right before they went on a tear. And Alex actually came with me, and he kind of watched me. And, like, I was legitimately sad. I always am. But I've already eaten my ice cream, so this shouldn't be a really strong take for me, but I'm selling it. They had a chance to get back into it. This West Coast trip pretty much ended it, and then I think the Cubs will probably finish that off. I hope I'm wrong. I hope they stay relevant, but I think that the focus is going to shift to 2019. Here in the next week or so. And I am trading. I'm going to try to trade Josh Harrison. If anyone will take him, anyone at all, we got him for sale. And I like Jay Hay. He's probably my favorite guy to talk to in that clubhouse. But overall, I can't see why he would have a place on this team next year. And I feel like maybe someone might want him through waivers as like a backup guy, maybe as like a veteran who has a little bit of postseason experience. He can play multiple positions, kind of, sort of still. And just, I think we have enough depth at second base to kind of just start training for next season and, you know, get his money off the books, maybe use that to get some actual help for next season and the offseason coming up. That's my buy-sell trade. Alex?
I got a thought that just popped in my head about Josh Harrison and how everything about Josh Harrison's contract, every single person said it was a terrible deal. You know, the Pirates really got bamboozled. They fell into, you know, a batted ball play, you know, rabbit hole with him, overpaid. I'll just play devil's advocate for a second, because he was an all-star in 2017. And for the first half of the season, he was a legitimate all-star.
Yeah.
Would the Pirates give him like a 2 or 3 year contract after 2017? Knowing that they're going to trade Cole, they're going to trade McCutcheon, they need someone to be, you know, a face of the franchise. And if they did that, would they have Josh Harrison for 2 more years? Which I don't think anybody right now is particularly keen on.
Yeah. I mean, stuff changes, man.
Stuff changes.
All right, what's yours? Give me your buy-sell.
You're going to go at the end of, you know, whenever I do my thing?
Yeah, he's a judge.
Okay, Nate's going to judge us. That's right. Okay. Do either one of you two wear contacts or have glasses or...
No, I was born I was born imperfect, but with perfect vision.
Well, I was born imperfect and very imperfect vision, so I've got to wear glasses. So I know the importance of it. And whenever I'm going to just take them off here for a second.
Oh, no. I know it's coming.
I cannot see anything. I am blind as a bat with them. I put them back on so I can see. Don't worry. I know how tough it is to see whenever you don't have a pair of glasses on, which is why I'm going to buy Joe West a pair of glasses to go with that cowboy hat. My goodness. That first strike three to Harrison yesterday was terrible, and Harrison threw a hissy fit.
That dude's gullet gets me excited for Thanksgiving. I just want to continue.
What a choice of words. The second one was probably a strike, I'll give him that, but I 100% get Jay Hay. Like, you're ringing me up twice on this, you know, pretty much the same part of the plate.
That gif.
And then the... next inning, Tyon walked a guy, and it was a BS walk because every single one of those pitches was on the black. It's like, okay, now you're just taking your aggression out on, yeah, on Tyon. What did he do? He didn't even bat, man.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm buying him a pair of glasses.
That gift from Jay Hay might be the best contribution he's made all year.
Him throwing his hands up
and
walking.
Yeah, I mean, that will live in infamy.
I'm selling your belief that, you know, this season's over.
Oh.
Because, like I said, you know, 500 football team, but they've got 16 games up against teams that they got to pass. I'm not quite ready to throw the season out the window yet.
All right.
There's a little flicker of hope. I'm going to say Pirates have a 1 in 10 chance of making the playoffs.
You didn't
right
eat the ice cream when we went
I
down
did not
there.
Eat. I had a cookie.
You did.
It All was right. aggressively okay.
All right.
And my trade, I am trading Jordy Mercer's bat for a Denny Hecheverria's glove.
Ooh.
Because
you just said last episode that wasn't something you would do.
I changed my mind. And you know why I changed my mind? Because in the 7th inning today, there was a line drive hit up the middle. And I must have just been conditioned after watching Jordy play shortstop the last couple years. I'm like, well, that's a base hit. And he made a diving catch. And you know what? I'm like, wow, that's great. And then I rewatched it. And it was a good catch. But it wasn't, you know, this web gem top 10 play. It was just a good catch. And I realized we haven't seen a catch like that in a while, so I know he can't hit the blind side of a bat. He's as bad as hitting as Joe West is at seeing. But I'll take the glove. I'll take the glove and at least get something out of my middle infielder.
All right, Nate, who wins, buy, sell, trade?
I'm taking Stumpf on this one.
Oh, man, that's biased.
I do like your three. I think the Hecheverria trade... And I'm not ready to sell on the team yet either. Okay. So
you got a couple believers here. All right, I'll tell you what I believe in here for our next segment. We got it is a Richard Rodriguez update. Alex, we did it.
We did it.
We got our man's Richard Rodriguez to 100. I repeat, 100 followers on Twitter. We gotta hit it again. We got. 100 followers on Twitter. That is the River Blast podcast difference. And shout out to my dad, who was the 100th follower. I owe him $1, 100 pennies. Shout out to the man, Dana Hiles, giving him that 100th follow. Maybe the next mission is getting my dad up to 100 followers. No, I think we got
to
pick.
We have to use our power for good.
Yes, exactly. One Hiles has more than enough fame in that family. So
has anybody like tweeted this to him? Does he know?
I fully intend to bring this up to him because I've interviewed him a couple times, and I'll be there Saturday and Sunday in the clubhouse. I fully intend to bring this up and say, like, I'm not going to tell him what. I'm just going to go, hey, you're welcome, and just walk away. And, I mean, he will not know what I'm talking about, but one day he might know.
I don't think he's tweeted since April.
No. His last tweet is, like, on the road to Miami, and, like, think about it. They were in Miami, like, in April, like, when J-Hay got hurt. And, like, it's been that long. So, I don't know. I need to check maybe the posts he's liked or something. Maybe he sees. But we need to cut up some audio from all the episodes and kind of just show him how dedicated we have been.
He might come on the,
show. Rich Rod is welcome on this podcast.
Anytime.
I mean, any Pirates player really is, but, like, I feel like we owe it to him. We might have to have Mike Gonzalez come on with him, the team translator, but I would love to show him this and just how dedicated we have been to getting him to 100. So we did that. That's our first accomplishment. We've debated on if we should get celebratory t-shirts or banners or pennants, whatever it needs.
Look at banner, Richard.
Yeah, like I'm proud of it. So now we'll move on to our next segment, sink or float. And then once again, Nate will be the judge of if this sinks or floats. This season, if the Pirates, you're still a believer that they have a shot at the playoffs, as are you, Alex. If they do not, is an 82 and 80 record at the end of this season a successful 2018 campaign for the Pirates? Yes or no? Sink or float?
I say that floats. I say going into the season, people were calling for 100 loss year. They were calling for, you know, the total demise of this team. They shocked a lot of people, and not just you know, somebody on Twitter, but actual, like, national reporters all counted the Pirates completely out, said that they were a losing team. They were probably
picked them to finish last.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I definitely think a winning season is that idea floats with me, that's a successful season. It's something to build on for next season.
Yeah, you just nailed it with the building on, because Town would be better, presumably. Musgrove would be presumably better.
Moran, maybe.
Moran, if you're, you know, the optimist.
Yeah.
Bell, if you're an optimist. Middle infield probably is going to be an improvement there just through default. This looks like a team that is going to be, their best days are not behind them.
Yeah. My thing is, 82-80 is a success unless they had a legitimate shot. Say they do really well at the end of August and they get back to, like, two, maybe a game back of the wild card, and they completely fall off the rails in September and still finish, you know, barely above 500. But, like, if they enter September with a legitimate chance and then they go end horribly, then it might feel a little bit different. But overall, still, grand scheme of things, yes, a winning record for 2018 is a success. I will say that overall. But if this team gets hot again, wins 11 in a row, they get back in the, like, legitimate hunt, and then they fall off to end the year, I think that's kind of damage their reputation coming into next year, considering that they've just been up and down the whole year. That might, you know, turn some fans off. That would be my only devil's advocate point to that. But overall, I think, yeah.
I think even with that devil's advocate point, see, here's the thing about us. We're three millennials right now.
Yeah.
So I don't know how many older viewers that we have, or listeners that we have, that are older than us. We were born into losing seasons.
We were molded by it.
We didn't see a winning season until we were a man.
And by then, it was blinding.
So just to nip two losing seasons, just get that out of the, get it done with.
You think disappointment from the Pirates is your ally?
See,
that was great.
I think if the Pirates are playing meaningful baseball into September, that's in and of itself a win.
I tweeted that earlier today, and someone like came at me and was like, "Oh yeah, you must enjoy just barely being able to pay your mortgage then too, you loser." And I retweeted him.
I quite enjoyed that actually.
Yeah, did you see that? It was probably your burner account. I retweeted it. I said, "Shout out to Greg being able to pay his mortgage." And he blocked me. Even though he was the one that came after me. So that's just a fun little tidbit. Right. You didn't even like my reply, Alex. You just kind of, you probably favorited his tweet.
Oh, that was funny. No, my burner account is Max Moroff 420.
All right. So we will wrap up the show with former Pirate of the Week. And it's our probably, I'm not speaking out of context here, out of turn or over. We're going to cut all that. I'm not speaking crazily here when I say that this guy is probably all of our favorite former Pirate, Andrew McCutchen. If you haven't seen this yet, I highly recommend it. You might, depending on what time you're listening to this, might be able to go on his Instagram and watch his Instagram story where he breaks down the fight between the Dodgers and the Giants that was started with Yasiel Puig yesterday. And his interpretation of anything is very, very entertaining, but Kutch just giving the play-by-play of a benches clearing brawl and what it's like to be in right field. And then just adding his sense of humor and charisma to the story, it's second to none. We'll play a little bit of the audio here.
I was in right field chilling, probably thinking about, you know, my last at-bat, or how that pitch was outside and called it a strike and it should have been a walk. But we ain't going to talk about that, right? So I'm looking down at my feet. They say, you know, I hear the fans. I'm like, what's going on? So I look up. Puig and Hundy, they going at it. Next thing you know, I feel a breeze, kind of feel like a light tornado just going right by me. It's the bullpen. I'm like, dang, my reaction time is way off. So I'm like, shoot, let me catch up with these people. By the time I got there, we was all just chilling, staring at each other. Literally, I thought about brightening the mood, and I was just going to get in a karate pose, like, come on. But I ain't do it. And that was it. That's basically most brawls, for outfielders anyway. But by the time you get there, it's over. So you just ran and got tired.
I mean, that's why people are going to miss this guy. I mean, they look at his numbers, and they know that, like... Like, other guys are better than him, statistically, but that's only a fraction of why people like McCutchen so much. Just stories like that, and, I mean, I showed you guys, and you both were cracking up.
Oh, yeah, it was great. Yeah.
It was hilarious.
So that leads us to how we're going to close the show. And we will be, I don't know, we'll kind of, if you think one of us, whoever has the best trio here, you tweet at us and tell us, and you'll know our Twitter handles by, I mean, I already shouted out Nate's like twice, and I'll say mine and Alex's at the end of the show, but we are each going to pick a trio of fighters to take on each other's, and you tell us who had the best one. We'll do a draft.
Major league players. Okay.
Nate is the new guy. I will let him go first. Go ahead. You got first pick.
All right. So we're doing round?
We're going to do a snake draft.
I'm taking Puig.
Yasiel Puig.
I loved that right hook he threw last
night. That
was
a slap. That's what turned me off.
In baseball terms, that was a haymaker. I'm taking that. I'm taking Puig.
All right, Alex, you're up.
Man, Puig was my guy.
Really? I was turned off.
Okay, well, then I'm going to take... The other, see, Noah and me have a little advantage here because we're in major league clubhouses and we can see exactly which players are Jack. So I'm going to go with the second most Jack player in Major League Baseball, Eric Thames. No, Eric Thames could rip me in half like the Juggernaut if he really wanted to.
All right, well, I'm going to go with a guy who has a very good fight record in MLB baseball. You talked about you were impressed by Puig's right hook. I'm going to go with Odor from the Texas Rangers. Probably the cleanest punch ever thrown on a baseball diamond. I mean, that was our generation's Nolan Ryan putting Ventura in a headlock and just beating the crap out of him. That clean punch on Joey Bats. I mean, Wikipedia named him his father after that. So, like, that literally happened. So I got to go with Odor as my first pick. And my second pick, Alex, you talked about clubhouses being, you know, exposed to just these mammoths of human beings. Joe Musgrove is a guy that no one in their right mind would charge when he is on the mound. I mean, we saw Javi Baez is another guy I'm debating on picking if he's still available, because I think he would be an absolute scrapper in a bar fight setting. He'd probably be my number one pick on the Cubs, despite them having bigger and stronger guys. I just think Javi is a guy that could get after it. He wanted no piece of Joe Musgrove earlier in the season, and no one else would. This is a guy who players on the Steelers would probably pass up a scuffle with Joe Musgrove once they saw him, you know, work out and everything. This is a guy that no one wants to mess with. So I take Musgrove with my second pick.
Steelers and fake Steelers.
Yeah.
I'm going with a scrapper of myself here, Mr. Sean Rodriguez.
Oh.
And I know the obvious joke is the water cooler here. But remember, like 2015, there were a couple times whenever, you know, the Pirates had to, you know, empty the benches, you know, defend their guy. He got ejected from every single one. He was ready to go.
He was.
Sean Rodriguez, I think, would take a punch for everyone in this room. And he doesn't even know us that well, no.
I mean, can he connect his punches better than he can connect?
I'll take the scrapper.
All right.
I'm up?
Yep. You got two in a row, Nate.
I'm going Mike Trout. Dude, he's a big dude. He's a linebacker.
He's a big dude, but I feel he'd be like, guys, stop.
That could be, but I'm taking just size here. I'm going raw heavyweight.
Okay.
And then I'm taking Stanton.
Stanton.
I'm taking just big dudes. I'm just trying to.
You missed out on the biggest
everyone.
Dude on that team.
Judge.
Yeah.
I'm still taking Stanton.
All right.
Just don't hit him in the jaw.
Yeah.
All right. Well, if you're going by I'm going to throw an Always Sunny reference out here. Body mass alone, you got to go with Bartolo Colon. You are not bringing Bartolo down.
That dude fought during the steroid era. People forget about that.
I mean, yeah, go ahead, tackle. Go after Snorlax, sure. What's
gonna no, but here's the thing. A benches clearing brawl with Bartolo Colon has to happen when he is on the mound.
He'd get because there eventually.
He is useless if he is coming from the bench, let alone if this is a September game, he might be sitting in the bullpen where you better hope that that fight, it might be a war, like the 10 years war. He arrives at the end and like he's the nuclear bomb that probably would end it all.
He's bringing the bullpen card out.
Yeah.
That's the only way he's getting there.
It's like, no, he does like, you hear like the glass shatter and it's the Stone Cold music and you just see him walking out there, except he's like not doing the strut on purpose. Like that's his sprint. So that's Bartolo Colon. That's an interesting pick. I mean, we mentioned Judge. I mean, yeah, I guess I got to go. You know what? I'm gonna keep Judge off just because I already talked about him. I'm going to go with a guy who I just look at and I think he could cause some problems. And that's Charlie Blackmon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's got that crazy look.
He's got
in
that
his
crazy
eye.
Look in that. And I could see him coming out in like a ghillie suit matching like the color of the grass in the infield or the dirt and everything. Like laying on the ground and like say he has an off day. Colorado's not dumb. They probably don't rest him. So, like, say he does get an off day, though, he probably, like, paints chalk on his back and, like, lays somewhere on the first baseline just waiting for, like, a time to square up. So I'll go Charlie Blackmon with my third pick. So my three, Odor, Musgrove, Blackmon, Alex, Thames, S-Rod, and Bartolo Colon. Nate, you go with Puig, Trout, and Stanton. Now, that's a hell of an outfield. but like I don't know how they actually play.
You would have the best actual team.
Yes. I mean,
one
yours
of us might win
yours,
the fight, but then you would like your, to
Alex, yours is a horrible actual baseball team. mine's somewhere in the middle. So yeah, let us know if you have anyone else that you thought we missed out on. There's a lot of different guys that you can make an argument for that probably would be a good scrapper here. So yeah, give us your picks. If we missed anyone, or if you think one of us had the best one, go ahead and tweet it at us. We got @GoldBoxStats, @AlexJStump, and of course me @Noah_Hiles95. Give us a follow, give us a shout out. Make fun of us? I don't know. I mean, I handled cyberbullying pretty darn well yesterday, if I do say so myself, aside from me getting blocked by a Twitter egg. So that's all I got. Any final thoughts, Nate, Alex?
You got one?
No, I am optimistic about this next stretch of games. I think they can make up a lot of ground. I think that they've sort of been playing below their potential for these past few games. They'll have a nice little bounce back.
Since we're now an official affiliate of the Pirates, can we also be an official affiliate of me being, you know, like Anna Kendrick's boyfriend or something like that? Or can we make stuff up like that? Do we have that power?
We can make up better jokes.
We're going to use the River Blast
that?
Bump
Let's
for evil.
That. All right. All right, so for Nate, for Alex, I am Noah Hiles signing off saying thank you for listening to another episode of the River Blast podcast. Like I said, give us a follow on Twitter. Let us know what you think. And if you're at the Pirates game anytime in this upcoming home series, give us a yell on Twitter. We would love to come down and meet up with you. We love our fans. Most of all, we love the guys who followed Richard Rodriguez on Twitter. But we love you all, and we will sign off how we always do, saying, let's go, Bucks.